It's Thursday, September 12th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 311 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 30 minutes.
Hello and welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Pat.
I'm still Wayne.
My name is Dan.
This is Julia.
We have one announcement for you guys this week. There is a booter gathering at Guardian Games in Portland, Oregon on September 29th at noon. So if you guys are anywhere in the area, head on out there on the 29th and meet up with some fellow booters and try some gaming.
Do it.
We'll have a link up in the show notes so with more information about it there. So check it out if you're out in the area. Or if you're going to be traveling that way to Oregon.
All the booters are going to totally fly out there, like the whole Fear the Boot crew. We're going out there.
Yeah?
Because I'm Dan, and we're doing it on my dime. I'm flying us all out there.
Okay.
I declare this.
I'll stay here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will be here as well.
It's damp there.
It is? No, we don't like damp.
Damp and asthmatics. You're laughing, but I was saying that damp asthmatics... Wow.
Those damp asthmatics. Those damp asthmatics.
They're damp asthmatics.
Gosh, I sound like a true nerd. My asthma won't let me go to the gaming store.
Good thing I had a rescue inhaler in my pocket protector.
Do you really think they would let acidic transgender Dan on a plane?
I would not.
He can't get on a plane until he's done with this.
He's acidic.
Exactly.
Wow.
Anyway,
His balance is all over the place.
Well, speaking of odd characters.
Yes.
Our topic for today is actually to talk about pre-generated characters. Now, this can be like for a con game, but it can also be for your regular game if you need a specific character type in the campaign that you're going to be running.
Yep, and we have to give credit for this topic to Magmu. I assume that's how you pronounce it because I have no idea.
Well, that's the way it's spelled, and that's the way I'm going to go with it. And I grew up on a farm, so
yeah.
There you
he posted
go.
Asking what makes a good con character.
What?
So you can say mag.
What?
He threw cow feces at electric fences, so we just let him.
What
run
does a
it.
Cow say, Julia?
Moo.
Very good. Now we're on board too. Okay.
All right, so when I first read this, I immediately thought about all the con games I've been in. I started thinking, as a player, how many times have I sat there, looked through the characters, the pre-gens, and thought, there's nothing I can latch onto with this character because there's no personality. Or I look at all of them as like, I don't want to be any of these.
Now,
have you guys had that?
No.
Yes, I have in Pathfinder Society, actually. And I think it's because I play so much Pathfinder that I know that there's so much you can do with it. And so when there's like, here's this crappy pre-gen character, I'm like, great. It's the one with the picture on the cover of the book. You know, like it's just, it seems so, I don't know, watered down. But I will say that not everybody is going to be that way, especially newbies. So if you're creating a brand new game for a new group of people, or if you're going to be running a con game, you have to expect you're going to have somebody new. And they're not going to know what to do for creating characters. So I think pre-gen characters are very important. But for people who are seasoned gamers like us, I don't know. I go to con games. I find out what game I'm playing. If I don't already have a character, I just make one before we start. Personally,
I think one thing that you guys have kind of hit on that I think is important in this is especially if it's in a con game setting where you're limited on time, you need to keep things simple. You need to come up with a one or maybe two sentence description of the character that really encapsulates what that character is or the personality, so that the people that are looking at it can look at each one, read a couple sentences, and then move on to the next one, and then that will help them to choose it. So you've got to, you know, really boil it down to its core and keep it simple.
Boil it down to the core concept. Like, let's say I'm looking at character sheets in front of me. I've got acidic transgender Dan, the bard. I'm sold.
Yeah.
Because that tells me a little bit about the character as well as what it can do. But if I'm looking there and I just see Bill the bard, that doesn't tell me as much. It doesn't narrow it down for me.
My name is Bill.
And I think most interesting characters can be boiled down to one quick phrase that is their core concept, and then pages, books, years, whatever, worth of information that are the nuances of why that's interesting.
Now, I will say, coming from the other side of it, sitting at a table at like a convention or even just a one-shot with somebody who's created this crazy elaborate character can sometimes be really annoying. Because you're like, all right, I don't know the system. And you're like going to take over the game because I'm going to sit in the corner because I don't understand what's going on right now. And all you're doing is showboating at this point is sometimes how it starts to feel. I actually played in a Pathfinder Society game where a guy was like that. He created this really elaborate character and he wanted everybody to know how elaborate this character was. And all of us it was our first time playing Pathfinder. It was the first session. So you have to use the pre-gen characters and you know, we've got these watered down things and he's got this like huge backstory for this. It made it really boring for us.
Also, I think one of the ways to make pre-gens fun is because I think they're inherently not fun simply because they're pre-generated. They're already made. You as a player did not put any thought into the character you're playing because it was just handed to you a moment ago. But that doesn't mean that it can't easily become fun. Wild interpretation helps a lot. There was a Ghostbusters game I played. Wayne ran a Ghostbusters game a couple of days ago, but I played in one several years ago at Fear the Con. Savage Worlds, pre-gen characters, and I was handed a sheet of paper that was literally just stats. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, some people love that. I hate that.
And you know, that's fine, because I looked at it, and then it was like, oh, he has doctor on there. What the hell does that mean? Well, that's the stat for the medical thing in this version of Savage Worlds. He's a doctor. Well, there was another guy at the table who also had doctor on his thing. It was Grungy Dan, and we played that up. We suddenly put doctor blah blah blah, whatever our characters' names were in front of our things, and we talked about it like we're doctors, right? We force everyone to call us doctors because we're doctors of parapsychology, right? We're not real doctors. And so we came up with like, doctor, doctor, yes, doctor. Every time we said something, you know, I think that we should go and catch that ghost. Yes, doctor, I think you're right. Why, thank you, doctor. That's very good. And we just played up this whole thing and it was a lot of fun and probably really annoying to the people around us, but we had a great time. To this day, we still refer to each other as doctor every once in a while. If we run into each other, like doctor, doctor. And so that's what you do is you look for these little hooks and stuff. Even in games where you make your, like on a con game, you make your own character. Sometimes you don't have a lot of time to really think about like, oh, the backstory and this and that, because really you're trying to jam through the character creation concepts. Maybe you've never played in this game before. And so you're really trying to figure stuff out. I did that in a game in this last Fear the Con. As you can tell, I don't game outside at cons outside of Fear the Con very much. But I gamed a stalker game, which is a Swedish game based on a Russian novel and Ukrainian video game. But I'd never done the system before. I'm trying to jam through it. And one of the skills you could take is like agitator or rebel or something like that, a rabble rouser. It's like, wow, that's some weird skills. I'll take that. No idea what they're supposed to do. Took like academic, rabble rouser, this, and like,
you made yourself?
Yes, I am an academic rabble rouser. I actually, when I was in college, I actually did lead a student protest, the true story. But anyway, I was looking at him like, oh, you know what? I just took these weird skills because they were, in fact, weird skills, not because they made any sense. And I'm like, I'm gonna base a character around this. He was a student rebel, student protester. And then I kind of made up this thing. It's like, oh, well, they're on this campus. There was this country he went to school at. There are all these protests and stuff. And he has like an explosive skill. Well, why does he have an explosive skill? Well, he's an extremist militant. And he fell off the edge of just protesting into acts of terrorism. And, you know, I built that and I just kept, it's like circling, 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 and quick hits of story. Nothing really super detailed and well thought out. Just quick hits so that we can get into the game so that I'm playing something that's more than just strength is this, hit points are this, charisma is this, my name is this.
One thing I found that I like to do is kind of a hybrid among it. So for the first time I did Bard's Bard, I had all the character sheets ready to go. It was Pathfinder, so I wasn't going to do character creation right there at the table. It would have taken too long. But then at the very beginning of the game, everyone has their sheets. They all know what they're playing. They all have whatever they need. Then I went around the table and asked each one a question. Why does your ruler want you dead?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had everyone add something to their character and define the personality.
Awesome.
Right there as we started the game. To me, it helped, you know, each player get into character of what that character was.
Yeah. And I think that leading questions do not necessarily have to just stick with a dread system or like my lucid system.
Yeah, I use it in Pathfinder.
Yeah. You can have a fully statted character sheet that's three pages of stats and charts and numbers and all kind of crunch, and then just slap even one question. Even like Wayne said, why does your ruler want you dead? Tells me so much more about your character than the fact that your strength is 15.
I think as a GM, whenever you're going to be doing this, whenever you're going to be creating pre-gen characters for even a one-shot game or anything that you're going to do, there are several things you have to keep in mind as to what you're trying to accomplish with it. One of the big things, I think, is the variety. You have certain, maybe, roles that you need to have filled in your game, and that's really why you're doing this. But
if every character's the same, then it's hard for people to do things. You feel like there's nothing special about my character versus, say, Julia's character.
Yeah, you're stepping on each other's
toes.
And it's
just a matter of which one has more personality at the table.
Right.
Which is,
or who's shy and who's not.
And even if someone's not shy, if it's a group they're not familiar with, they may be less likely to speak up, or they may be more likely.
Yeah, I would say I'm quite the opposite.
And I think one thing that you can sometimes use this to be dealing with, one person in your group always plays the same thing. I think we've all known that. We've all seen that. And you know, it's just a matter of, okay, we've seen that character 15 times over. You can potentially use this to, you know, introduce something new.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I think that we want to hit on, though, is as a GM, how much do you predefine and how much do you want to leave up to your character? And I think that's sort of the fine line that we're looking for here. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I struggle with it. A lot of it comes down to the system being used as well. Like Ghostbusters, next time I run that at a con, I don't think I'll ever do character creation for Ghostbusters, because I can have the characters created right there at the table in a matter of minutes. There's just no need to.
Yeah, but something like Dresden Files?
Yeah, or Pathfinder or something that takes a lot more stats. I definitely want to get most of the stats done, but it adds a lot to the fun sometimes to be able to define some of that. But other players, I've noticed, not everyone feels the way I do about that. Some players want to sit there, have a complete, total character sheet ready to go, especially if they've never done the system. They're already learning the system. They don't want to go through character creation as well.
You really have to weigh how much crunch your system has, because if you have, say, 4 hours to game and it takes an hour to make characters, you know, you may understand the system. You may be able to whip out 5 characters in 20 minutes. You have people sitting at your table who maybe has never played before.
Yeah.
And you have multiple people. So now you're kind of herding cats to get them all. They may all be on point. They may be all on task, but they're not struggling through, but they're working through and trying to understand the concepts. Well, that's eating game time.
Yeah.
Well, also as a player, if I've never played a system, a lot of times the first character I make in the system is utterly useless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you don't know what is useful.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So if I sit down at a con game, I want to experience the system. I don't want to experience my own personal failure to make a character in the system. Right. Too.
Because that'll also turn you away from a system.
Exactly. I want to feel effective. And sometimes having a completed character sheet in front of me will help that. I still want to define my personality. Right. But a lot of times I even like having a personality given to me. And then I'll read through and I'll pick up on quirks of that personality and go from there.
I've run into a couple things, and I probably go to a lot more conventions than you guys in game because I've traveled a lot to do it. But I've been to a convention where somebody has posted on the game, if you've never played this game and would like to make a character, show up like 20 minutes early. The GM actually sat down with you and helped you learn how to create a character in the system, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
Because you get to learn about it and it's not cutting into the game time.
I would totally do that. If a game had that on there, I would show up 20 minutes early just to learn how to make it.
Learn how to make it.
Because I actually enjoy making characters.
And a lot of times, like, there's a guy who goes to a lot of the conventions I go to named Cat, and that's like his nickname. And he GMs a lot of Serenity, and I love that system. I know the heck out of it. I don't need to sit down and do characters. But what he does is he forces all of his normal gaming group, whenever they create a new character, to not mark up on their first level character, and he takes it. Because he already has a personality that somebody else made, and it's different because sometimes when you make personalities for each pre-gen character, they tend to be the same. He's able to be like, oh, you get this character, and the way that my friend wrote it was this, this, and this, but it's totally fine with you interpreting it.
That is brilliant. I'm adding that to my lazy GM notes.
it's like, it was like the coolest thing I've ever seen him do. I was like, that is so neat. But I think that some crunchier systems like Pathfinder, you should just have pre-gens. That is just too much to wade through to deal with. I mean, feats alone can be overwhelming for a new player.
Yeah, especially when you're looking at a system like Pathfinder or D&D where you're not just, okay, I'm rolling stats and I'm putting a check by a couple of skills and then that's that.
Right.
We're talking, it's essentially a catalog.
Right.
Where it's like, okay, I need to open the books, I need to shop my feats, and I need to shop my powers, and I need to shop my spells. Now I need to shop my equipment, and you're going through these lists and lists and lists and lists of stuff, and you have to parse out all the stuff you don't want and get all the stuff you do. That's way too much time for a con game.
Where I have a real hard time are fate-based systems, where the character creation and the world creation is part of the fun, but it takes a while.
Yeah.
I have actually seen this done very interestingly. Somebody created characters, but didn't create the world. And so everybody showed up and got to write the world together, because quite honestly, that's like the easiest stuff to come up with.
I've thought about doing all of the stats and leaving all of the aspects to the players and things like that, because I was trying to find interesting ways to mix that, because it is a lot of fun to make your own aspects and go with it. But it does take time, especially if you've got a table of 5-6 people and you only have so much time to game. It makes it really difficult.
Yeah. Hey, Pat.
Yes.
When you sit down at a table for and you have pregens in front of you, what makes one jump out at you?
That's a hard question for me to answer, because I will look through the characters and sort of skim them. I don't read in detail because, again, I don't want to.
That goes back to my I want a core concept that's really
exactly quick to read. That's why I like it. I want one or two sentences that I can look at, you know, something just very basic. And it literally is just I look through all of them and hopefully something will jump out at me. So it's a vague answer, but for me, that can be different every time. Sometimes it can be about the character class itself. Sometimes it could be about a relationship that this character it says they have with somebody else. Or it could just be any myriad of things for me. So I think that's another thing that you need to sort of think about is, and when you're doing this, is your players are going to latch on to many different things. You know, whatever the hook is, it's not always going to be this one or two sentence thing of this is what Joe character does. Everything that you do is really important.
Well, yeah, because they could just like the name Bob. And so like this guy's name's too, Bob. Yeah, you
know. I know for me, well, in this shout out to Michael, when we played Monster Hearts at Fear the Con, this is a game I've never played before.
Yeah.
So I was looking at the character, at the pre-gen characters that were there, and there's a lot to them, really. I mean, for as simple as it is, once you start playing, it's simple. But sitting down for the first time ever, there's like 3 or 4 different sections you have to read. And I was a little overwhelmed because there were a lot of characters. There were like 15 or 20 characters I think you could choose through. And I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to pick? And for me, in that one, it was as simple as each of the characters had a sort of a sketch. And that's literally how I chose a character that way. I liked the look of this character as opposed to what they really did.
I found that's very common in superhero games. People go out to one of the hero creator websites and they'll create a look of the character. That's one of the first things I'm looking through when I'm flipping through the character sheets. What does the character look like? Even though it has nothing to do with how it's going to play,
yeah,
it does, I don't know, give me a better connection.
Well, yeah, it helps you be able to shape the character better.
I think that is something to really consider. And I know for me, like, I cannot draw for crap. My artistic ability is not in drawing things. It's in other things.
My stick figure have male parts. I'm that bad at drawing.
You know, as a GM, if you're going to do this, you should really consider to somehow, you know, represent the character. One of my favorite things that I've ever seen that has been done is what Michael Matthews did. It's Michael Matthews, right?
Yeah.
What Michael Matthews did in the Monster's Heart game, and I think he's doing this elsewhere. He basically went on something like the equivalent of IMDb and printed out like 300 headshots of models. And he had those there, and that's what we looked through. And like we picked out our characters that way. Yeah. But then he also used them for every NPC that was in there. And it was everything. He had them from, you know, teenage all the way up to like elderly people represented. So it was great. And it was an immediate thing of boom. He pulls out the character, you know, the headshot, and puts it down there. And you immediately see this is what so-and-so looks like. And it was brilliant. I love that. So something as simple as that can be a big help cool
every day in our games. We use Obsidian Portal not for like wiki and all that stuff. We literally use it for pictures. All of the NPCs have their pictures, so all you have to do is go to Obsidian Portal and you're like, oh, this dude looks like this, or like there was a guy who's supposed to be really sexy but you can't really picture it, and so he threw up like a sexy model, and I'm like, oh, that makes it way easier for this guy to hit on me and me to be okay with it, you know. It's just the pictures and being able to visualize any character is going to do wonders.
I didn't know they
especially
have pictures of me on Obsidian Portal.
Oh yes, Wayne.
Lots.
Oh yes, I have them all bookmarked.
Oh, that was a good one, Wayne. But I think especially when you're doing a quick pick of a character, definitely pictures. Definitely, that's a really good idea.
You know, one thing I did with the superhero game I ran, The Last Fear of the Con, it doesn't work for every genre, but I did catchphrases. Because superheroes works good for catchphrases. Each character had a catchphrase that was written on there, and that kind of helped people get a kind of get into the character. When they couldn't figure out what else they wanted to say, they'd fall back on the catchphrase. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was it was kind of cool. It was kind of like a crutch for them until they got the feel of the character.
Speaking of pre-gen characters in con games, has anybody sat down at a table with a GM who has like a pile of characters and no one will pick up the pages? Like, no one will actually pick characters. They're just all sitting there waiting for somebody else to make a move.
Yes.
I've had that happen so many times. And I guess because I can be
a
little...
I won't just sit there. So if that happens, I'm the first one to grab something and then it avalanches out. So I've never actually seen that.
What ends up happening is I have a very overwhelming personality at cons because I quite honestly don't give a crap what I say around people. And so I think that people get intimidated. So I will grab them and I'm just like looking at them. Everybody's looking at me. I'm like, does anybody want to play this? And I just end up assigning people stuff because nobody's taking initiative and I feel terrible doing it. But I'm like, is anybody else
your initiative role?
On the other hand, though, if you're the one running the game at a con game and you're sitting there at the table and you're letting all your players sit there for more than 30 seconds without picking up the character sheets, that's when your responsibility as a GM is to pick up the sheets
and
literally just
out.
Start handing them around and say, everybody look at these, and when you're done, pass around, everybody, because you have to choose your character.
This is a Pathfinder Society game, so they're always not the enthusiastic people.
When I run a game at a con, I am usually, at least I try to be, sitting there before the slot starts at the table I'm supposed to be. I kind of organize my stuff a bit, and then people come in, and when everyone's gathered, then it's just like, I start talking immediately, because I want to kind of intro the game and prep them. For me, it's really important for me to set expectations because I run the games I write, and I write really dark games. And so I want to make sure that they know it's just like, okay, your characters, I'm going to hurt them and they're going to get very bent. And I want them to be very strange and injured. Failure is a possibility. Your characters will die. You know, this is something that's going to happen. I usually intro that with a little speech about, these are the expectations that we have. We're running a timed game here. That doesn't mean that our slot ends at this time. That means, boom, I have a counter. And if you notice, it's been running the entire time I've been talking. I am eating up your time with this counter. Do we need to continue having me talk, or do we want to jump into this game?
Yeah.
And
so one thing that I've had with some of my characters, I like having secrets. I like the individual characters to have a secret. Not that they're against the party or anything, just there is something about your character that your character hasn't shared with the other characters. And I kind of struggle with, how do I do that without giving it away? Because the secret is one of the interesting things about the character, but if it's right there on the character sheet, then everyone, as they're flipping through, sees everybody else's secrets. And I like keeping it from the other players because I think that's more fun.
Note card it.
And that's what I've always done. But I've always felt like that might be a bait and switch for people. Like, you get the character, you read the character sheet, it's really interesting, and now you have this crazy secret. I had a superhero that was a cat girl that actually was afraid of cats.
Yeah, but that's cool.
I think that's fantastic. I think that goes along with your leading questions example that you gave earlier on, though. To me, that's kind of the same thing, because you're going to do the same things with that, because when you sit down at the table, and it's not even a secret, but the first thing you say is, all right, going around the table, why does your boss want you dead, Chad?
Yeah.
All of a sudden you're like, whoa, okay, well, this is, that's, to me, that's the same thing. So, but yeah, I like that idea of, you know, or you could even make it random. I mean, that's another thing. You could have an envelope full of secrets and they draw it random. Here's your secret. It's not assigned to that specific character.
Yeah. So, and as I don't like secrets like you are a traitor, but I like things like personality quirks or you are addicted to something. You can define what you're addicted to, but you are addicted to something, and little quirks like that. I think that would probably do very well random.
There are people who don't like that.
Well, and that's the cool thing about the way I do it is that as I hand it out,
I think it's cool.
If you don't want to ever acknowledge the secret, you don't have to.
Well, for me, it's because Chad, it depends on the game.
Right.
Con game, one shot game.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Yes.
Long standing campaign. Hate it.
Oh, no. Well, you don't want somebody else to define your stuff.
Exactly.
For you in a long term.
And I'm thinking leading questions and the questionnaire type stuff for con type game. You put a lot of nasty or backstabby or secret or wrong things and leading questions in the sheet and such. And so a lot of that is secret. It's held in and then it kind of gets revealed over time or directs a character and that sort of thing. Dawn doesn't like that. So Dawn does not like leading questions. She wants to define her own thing. So I ran a game recently. We were playtesting this new game I'm writing, and it had questionnaires in it. And I remember there's a stark difference between Dawn's character and Pat's character's questionnaires. Pat, I loved your questionnaire because it wasn't just, I answer this with a good answer, and I answer this with a good answer. You built a narrative that crawled along each question. And I read it like a one-page story, and it was so cool. Dawn didn't like that. She wrote incomplete sentences. No punctuation. Three words. It's just like, yes, no, I don't like that because I don't like him. You know, that sort of stuff. And it's just like, the first time she did it, I handed it back to her, and I'm like, nope.
And he never did that again.
Well, what I did was I'm like, okay, I'm rewriting these questions to force you to give me, it's less leading and more specific. And so I gave her those. She wrote the same short, curt answers, but at least they were specific answers that I could do. Because that's the whole thing about a questionnaire. It's for the player and the game master. Yeah. So the game master can draw things out of it and put it in the plot.
And I think as a GM, you've got to be aware of that, that like you said, all your players are different.
Yeah.
Some players are going to be really into something and they're going to go, you know, all in, and some they're not. They don't like that at all. And that can happen anyway. That can happen with questionnaires. That can happen with even just looking at the characters or trying to come up with their own personalities. Mm-hmm. Some people, they don't want to come up with personality. They just want it to be sort of spoon fed to them, so to speak.
Yeah. They just,
so like, you've got to, it's like, it kind of goes back to our old advice of know your players. Yes. If you're playing with your regular group, with a con game, you're not going to be, but you know, but in a con game, be flexible.
Well, and
in a
watch con, body language. Well, really important.
In a con game, you have an advantage too, because you've perchance advertised the game. You're saying, hi, I'm playing this game where you are on a spaceship and you've lost all your memories and there's no character sheet and there's a Jenga tower and there's no dice. And people are going to sit down and say, no dice. I hate games with no dice. Please let me play. No, they're not going to do that at all.
Yeah. Only people who are interested in your game are going to sign up.
You still need to be a little flexible because it could be like, okay, so Julia, you sit down at the game because you're into that. And Pat, you sit down at the game and you're into that. Wayne came to the con with you two.
Yeah, so he's going to join
not really
your game.
Into it, but he doesn't want to spend the next 4 hours by himself. Sure. And so,
I have a great story from the last Fear of the Con that goes back to players may not even know what they want. At the superhero game that I've mentioned a few times that I ran, there was someone that was signed up, sat down there. He has never played a role-playing game in his life. He was there. He was the father of one of the people at the table. And he's like, I just kind of want to sit around, watch the game. It's like, okay. So as the game goes on, he's getting more and more interested in everything that's going on. And after we take one of the breaks, we go back to him a little bit. It's like, well, we really, in this situation, need this one last NPC that's here just for this one scene. And we got the character sheet over to him. We got the dice over to him. And we got him involved. And he got to roll dice for the first time.
Nice.
And it's like, he didn't know what he was going to enjoy at all. Because he knew nothing about role playing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He just knew this is something that my daughter and her husband do, and I'm going to come with them to this convention. I'm just going to kind of watch and have, you know, enjoy. And then he actually really seemed to get into the character. He enjoyed what he was doing. He got a chance to roll dice without any pressure at all. Someone like him, if we would have sat down and made all the characters right there and done the leading questions, that wouldn't have worked.
No, not at all.
It's Tyler Durden rules, man. If this is your first night at NerdCon, you have to role play.
All right. Well, I think that's where we're going to wrap this one up. I hope that Magmu, I hope we answer your questions sufficiently for you. And I hope that we have some good advice for any of you GMs out there that are either going to be running a con game at, say, like, I don't know, Fear the Con 7 that'll be coming up sometime soon, or any other con that's coming up, or you just need to make some characters for a game that you're running with your group.
Hey,
just,
locals, and St. Louis Archon is October 4th.
That is literally around the corner. Yes. You know, it's amazing to me how quickly this year has gone by, especially the summer. All right, so have some good games, and we'll talk to you next time.
Peace out.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.